Ah, yes. Thank you. Counsel, I want to thank you for your assistance to the court in presenting argument this morning and filing briefs on behalf of the appellant. Counsel for appellants.
Please, the court.
This is a case, really the sole issue that we've raised on our briefs is standing. And quite frankly, I hesitate to tell this panel anything about standing in view of your past experience. We cited Amgem and Shirley, and all three of you were involved in those cases. To my surprise, the opponent, the appellee, the U.S. government, and the FDA did not cite those cases in their brief. And if I may, I would like to read a couple of quotes from those briefs, from your opinion, Judge Rogers, in Amgem, where at page 109 of that opinion, you said the salient considerations under the APA is whether the challenger's interests are such that they, quote, in practice can be expected to police the interests of the statute that the statute protects, close quote.
I don't understand prudential standing to be at issue here. I thought the only issue was Article III standing.
Well, I certainly briefed prudential standing. I think that there's an argument for Article III standing, but
what is
maybe
that
you
argument?
Turn to that.
Yeah, yes,
contest that one.
Let's focus on Article III.
You have to have both.
May I have a second? Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I reserve 3 minutes, and I don't know that that's true for the counter here, Your Honor. So I may be in error on that.
Well, you know what the appellees say, that your past harms are insufficient for your injunctive relief.
Well,
present harms are insufficient.
The present harms aren't speculative, Your Honor. There are several hundred members of COMED. In addition, as we point out in the brief, there's another organization that joins with them, which is the Methodist Women.
Are the Methodist Women a party?
No, they're not, Your Honor. No woman necessarily knows the day she gets pregnant. So, yes, they make the argument that a pregnant woman can get mercury-free vaccines. Well, in the first place, not all mercury-free vaccines are totally free of mercury, and mercury is cumulative, as I'll point out. But secondly, if a woman gets a vaccine, goes to her doctor, he says, are you pregnant? She says no, but she may well not know whether she's pregnant. And so
your argument, in effect, is a variation on public citizen versus foreman.
I'm not
raised in the amicus brief.
I don't really remember that case, Your Honor. I read the amicus.
Well, it says that last night. There were difficulties in avoiding bacon with nitrites. The plaintiffs were concerned about eating bacon with nitrites, and the court said that bacon without nitrites was not readily available. And you're saying that as a practical matter, your members do not, inevitably do not know enough to know when to exercise the special precautions that would be needed to avoid the mercury-laden vaccine.
That's true, Your Honor. There's another issue, however, and that is that mercury is, that I hadn't gotten to yet, but I agree with what you just said. And most doctors don't understand it. That's, I don't know that that's in the record, but there's also the issue of the cumulative effect of mercury. Mercury's an element.
But for your standing, the problem is whether members of your organization can avoid it when they need to.
Well, my answer to that would be you always need to avoid mercury.
And then there goes your argument about the special circumstances of unknown pregnancy. That becomes irrelevant. If you always need to avoid it, all your members will presumably be always avoiding it.
Well, there's the issue of whether it's available, Your Honor, at that point.
What's your record on that? What record did you make as to difficulties in getting access to it?
There's a record in the motion for a preliminary injunction, which was overruled by the judge. I did not cite that, to the best of my knowledge, in the brief.
Well, you have declarations, all right?
Yes, we do have declarations.
Focus on what you do have.
We have the declaration, Ms. Weinmaster, in regard to her son.
All right, but let me just follow up on, are you familiar now with the public citizen case? Do you remember it, the Bacon case?
You don't remember it?
It was in the...
It's in the amicus brief, but...
You don't remember it. All right, well, in that case, the court was saying that because these people had to spend more money to buy the nitrate-free bacon, they had shown an injury, in fact, harm, all right? And they didn't have to go all over the country looking for this good bacon, and they didn't have to abstain either. And so my question is, you have a lot of declarations that say, for example, Adam Sykes, who says he must be vaccinated to attend school, and he must attend school. And he says he's concerned because he may be genetically predisposed to injury if he has a vaccine with mercury in it. And his father says he and the mother have gone to great efforts to reduce and to avoid vaccines. So the argument is, if you're able to avoid it and you haven't put any evidence of what is the additional, say like in the Bacon case, cost that's associated or anything like that, if you're able to sort of live your life without confronting these vaccines that have this mercury preservative, then where's the harm?
Well, number one, there's mercury even in the mercury-free vaccines. So for somebody like Adam, who's already been, has some neurological deficits, you're putting a neurotoxin into his system.
I don't see that in any of your declarations. I mean, it may be true, but okay. I don't know how I'm supposed to know it.
The other thing is that Adam is an incompetent. His mother is considerably older than he is, and eventually he may well be on his own without his mother there to protect himself. Now, I don't know that that's in a declaration, Your Honor, but that's the truth.
What precise remedy are you asking?
We're asking for the remedy of standing so that
No, that's not a remedy. That's a getting through a doorway into court. Suppose you get through the doorway, you're in court, and you win on the merits. What relief do you want?
We want to force the ADA to require testing of these vaccines to ensure safety. The FDA, in their brief, claims...
I'm sure that that, as you frame it, is different from what the FDA believes it's doing now. It's just that it allows both types, the mercury-free and the not mercury-free, to be sold, there being evidently a difficulty in getting the full quantity of mercury-free available.
Well, Your Honor, in my brief, I cite from a statement the FDA made in 1998 that they want that they should go to single dose vaccines, and I can
open. So that would be your remedy, and the single dose vaccines, characteristically or invariably, are without mercury.
Characteristically, they're either very low dose mercury or they're without mercury. They cost slightly more.
So that would be what you would ask, that FDA prohibit all other vaccines.
That's the ultimate thing we'd like, Your Honor, but the FDA was put under burden in 1977 to ensure safety of vaccines.
You're getting into the merits, which we assume in your favor. You don't have to worry about them.
No. Well, but what I'm saying is that the remedy we really want is to require testing, valid testing.
All right, but back to just standing.
Yes.
You say the single doses cost more.
Yes.
Where does anybody say that in an affidavit?
I don't think it's said in an affidavit, Your Honor.
That's what we're looking for. I mean, it's that type of, what's the actual harm? If you have to pay more, the Bacon case suggests that's enough.
Well.
But the only affidavit I could find that even talked about cost, but it didn't connect it to either these conditions of autistic behavior or mercury, was the reference to the cost of insurance and the cost of tuition. And the implication is, because of these injuries, they have to pay higher insurance costs, and they have to send the child to a special school. But the affidavit or the declaration doesn't actually say that.
Well, I think that's correct, but that doesn't deal directly with the cost of the vaccine, Your Honor.
No, but if they have to send them to a special school because of the damage they suffered, I mean, that's a cost.
Well, that's assuming that the vaccine caused that child's injury, and I don't know that's really proved in that affidavit. There is a very involved petition that's over 400 pages. It's part of the record. The FDA's record is about 35 pages of their letter denying the petition. But the petition that we have is very involved. I did not cite that the cost in my brief, but I suspect that it's in that petition.
One of the concerns I have about your theory is how it would apply in other cases. So your theory, if accepted, would seem to say that consumers of products or services have standing to challenge the government's decision not to ban those products or services, even if you have the ability to avoid using it, you the consumer. And to get around that, as Judge Rogers was saying, you would seem to have to show some kind of harm. This is not like the environmental cases, for example, that I know you cite in your brief, where the government's failure to ban something, some product that causes dirtier air, dirtier water, affects directly, increases your risk of physical injury. I just don't see anything like that, either on the cost side or the physical, increased risk of physical injury side that we have in the environmental cases here.
Well, you mentioned banning. And we're not asking that vaccines be banned. I understand that.
Right, I get that. But you're asking for increased regulation, I guess.
We're really asking that the regulations that the FDA is currently under be followed. Mm-hmm. And I think I grant you that.
But your theory would go to, if you want something, say, banned or subject to a more stringent scheme of regulation, you have standing to challenge that. Even if you can avoid the product or service in question.
Well, I don't know that this goes to Article III standing, but in terms of prudential standing, I think that that is well the case, because...
Right, okay, but on the Article III standing, which you need here, as Judge Williams said, I'm concerned that there's not that hook that we have in the environmental cases or in some of the...
Well, one of the things I think that is the hook, and I don't know whether this is well put forward to the court or not, but if a woman, and I'm using a woman because if she's potentially pregnant, if she's mm-hmm. of age to be pregnant, she's married, she has no intention to have any more children, but she may be pregnant. If she goes to her doctor and says she wants a mercury-free vaccine, she's at risk for getting a full-dose mercury vaccine. It just depends on whether the information gets properly to the nurse.
That strikes me as a different argument.
Anybody who goes and gets a vaccine, Judge Williams, is at risk for getting a mercury vaccine, because if the nurse just, if she's got both back there and she goes and fills it up with the mercury vaccine instead of the non-mercury vaccine, you're going to get mercury. And most, you know, there's no guarantee that
To get around that, you'd absolutely have to have a ban on mercury-free vaccine, because there's always a risk of stupid intermediaries.
Well, yes, there is, and as one at one point, I
the That's probably why I was interested in what relief you were asking, because to the extent that you ask for a ban on mercury using vaccines, you would solve this problem, and so you would at the margin diminish the risk. To the extent that your relief asked would be something less stringent, you don't get around the question of the intermediary who's incompetent.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Your Honor. We're not asking for a ban, but we're convinced that if the testing that the FDA should require of the manufacturers and require of themselves is performed, it will result in a ban. Mercury has no place in medicine. It is a cumulative poison. So everyone who's not a co-med member who is going and getting flu shots is getting mercury in their system. And that's, and as I say in here and discuss some in the brief, that's highly genetically variable in terms of whether you and I excrete mercury in the same fashion.
Why don't we hear from Appley and we'll give you some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Henry Whitaker on behalf of FDA. With me here today at council table are Douglas Letter and Shoshana Hutchison from FDA. There's no evidence in this record that the plaintiffs have put in that they faced any increased costs as a result of attempting to obtain thimerosal-free flu vaccines. There's nothing in the record. And Judge Walton explicitly discussed this. And
what about these miscarriages?
Well, Your Honor, I think it is very well established that past injury alone is not sufficient to obtain standing to bring a suit for prospective relief. And this...
What about the argument, though, counsel was making that the woman may not be potentially eligible to be pregnant, an able to be pregnant woman may not know she is, in fact, pregnant. And even if she does know, she may get a vaccine that causes, as these five different women declare in their affidavits, cause them to have a premature termination of the pregnancy.
Well, all of the identifiable members of COMED and plaintiffs are individuals who avowedly are seeking to avoid thimerosal-preserved flu vaccines. And so I think, as the panel's questions have indicated, there's a very easy way for them to avoid any potential risk of injury, and that is...
What's the easy way for them to avoid it?
To get a flu vaccine that does not contain thimerosal.
Well, one woman says she went to four different pharmacies. They didn't have it. Another woman says she went to the clinic. They didn't have it. At least the Second Circuit, a district court, has said, you know, a lot of doctors don't have this. A lot of clinics don't have this.
Well, I think there are some isolated allegations in the record that certain clinics, I suppose, did not contain thimerosal free vaccines back in what this would be.
And so why isn't that enough?
Well, Your Honor, I think as the district court pointed out, the fact that certain isolated clinics back then did not have those vaccines is not sufficient evidence that on a going forward basis, those plaintiffs would face the same problems, particularly given...
The district court says you have the burden to show that you can't get it anywhere, at any time, under any circumstances. I don't know where he gets that for standing.
Well, I'm not sure that's quite what the district court said, but it is their burden, of
course.
I'll quote
it for you. He uses the word all. I mean, it's a very high burden that he has set for showing harm, and at least our cases don't go that far yet.
Well, one interesting thing, Your Honor, it is their burden, and the fact is that the supply of non-thimerosal preserved vaccines has actually increased a substantial amount since these allegations were first propounded. I mean, back in...
So all these miscarriages since then, FDA has done something to take this stuff off the market?
No, Your Honor. Thimerosal vaccines are still licensed, and that's the relief plaintiffs are seeking. But the fact...
The relief they're seeking is to eliminate licensing for the Thimerosal.
And I believe they're also seeking a recall, Your Honor. But, of course, we're not in charge of producing vaccines. Manufacturers do that. And the fact is that manufacturers have increased production of vaccines that do not contain Thimerosal preservative to the tune of 50 million a couple years ago to 79 million today.
But that's all irrelevant, isn't it, if one member has standing?
Well, it is relevant to the extent, Your Honor, that it's entirely speculative,
this woman said she went to four different pharmacies and she couldn't find this mercury-free. They didn't have it. Another woman said she went to the doctor, they didn't have it. I mean, these are people who have tried to get it and haven't been able to get it.
Well, but I think what would be required, Your Honor, is some type of particularized reason to believe that, again, on a going forward basis, and this is a super
right, it's likely that women in the future will become pregnant.
No, Your Honor, actually, I don't think that's quite the question. I think the question...
No, I mean, the way I read your brief, past harm is no good, future harm is no good, present harm is no good. And I thought to myself, well, what do you have to show here? And I thought in Adam's case, maybe you have to show that his school is forcing him to take a flu vaccine and his parents have been to these four pharmacies and they can't get it. I mean, it's sort of like the precipice argument. I just want to be sure how far you're going on your standard.
Your Honor, we certainly wouldn't contend if there were an adequate showing of future harm as a result of FDA's actions that wouldn't be sufficient. But in any event, one point is that...
So if there was a declaration that said, I am a woman who would like to become pregnant in the future, and I am a member of this organization, that would be enough?
No, I don't think it would be enough, Your
Honor.
What
would be enough? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think first of all, again, Your Honor, the issue would be the availability of alternatives going forward. And if there were some particularized reason...
She went to four pharmacies. They didn't have it. She went to her doctor. He didn't have it. I just need to know how high this burden is.
Well, Your Honor, I suppose if there were some reason to believe that would also be true in the future, as in addition to the past, then that might get over that hurdle. It wouldn't get around this hurdle,
well,
Your Honor.
Well, you have acknowledged that the mercury-preserved vaccines are still on the market, that they're not banned.
Yes, that's
all right. So they're out there. And the declarations show that these people who are very alert to this issue have run into situations where they haven't been able to get alternatives.
In certain isolated circumstances.
We only need one. That's my point.
Well, Your Honor, but even if the plaintiffs have got all this relief, and again, they are seeking delicensing, that would simply make the shortage worse because that would mean...
That's a different issue. That's their choice as to whether they want to bring this litigation.
Oh, it's not a different issue, Your Honor.
No, we're just here at standing. That's all. What's
your answer to the question,
yeah.
Counsel? I want to hear it.
The answer to which question, Your Honor?
The proposition that a ban would not make matters worse for plaintiffs.
Oh, I think
I took your argument to be that if the mercury using vaccine were totally unavailable, demand for the mercury free vaccine would be greater. And persons for whom it was important would therefore find it harder to get.
Exactly, Your Honor. The shortage would be even worse. I mean, again, any shortage of thimerosal-free vaccines is not something that is traceable to any action the FDA has taken or is redressable by anything in this litigation. So to the extent, so Judge Rogers, to answer your question, even if there were evidence that these plaintiffs faced costs in obtaining thimerosal-free vaccines, and again, I do not agree with the proposition there is any such evidence, but even if there were, that injury would not be redressable by banning thimerosal-containing vaccines.
That's why I asked you about the pregnancies, the miscarriages. I mean, clearly that's something that could happen in the future.
It is.
And this stuff is still out there.
Well, I think it is a hypothetical concern, Your Honor, because I don't think that they've identified any member of CoMed or any plaintiff that is in the situation that Your Honor is hypothesizing.
Well, but they've got five women who said they had these vaccines that had this mercury preservative, and they had these spontaneous terminations of her pregnancy, four miscarriages.
And there's no allegation that that injury is likely to recur with respect to those particular individuals or with respect to any individual currently before the court. But even if they're, that injury is entirely speculative. But again, to the extent the injury is increased cost as a result of the fact that you have to obtain a thimerosal-free vaccine, again, that's not something that would.
So you answered the increased cost there. What about the burden? And we've talked a little bit about that so far. So it's harder, as Judge Rogers says, to get the vaccine you want because it's not available. Where do you draw the line between a case that's not good enough for standing and one that is, in terms of the burden of obtaining the product you want?
Well, I think in this case, the same argument could be made with respect to non-monetary burdens. And again, there's no evidence of any such non-monetary burdens. But again, if the shortage gets worse as a result of banning thimerosal vaccines, or still worse, recalling them from the market, then it's going to be even more difficult. The delay will be even greater. But again, there's no allegation in this case that they.
Well, I think the idea is because of the prevalence of the mercury vaccines, it's hard to find one that's free of that, and therefore you have to go to a lot of different pharmacies or different doctors, or maybe not won't be able to find it at all. And my question is, at what point does that burden suffice to establish standing, or is it impossible to draw?
I don't think in this case that any burden would be sufficient to create standing, because again, the remedy in this case
suppose the FDA's decision to allow this meant that there, as a practical matter, were no alternatives standing there.
Right. If there were no alternatives, then the result of banning thimerosal vaccines and recalling them from the market would be that no one could get vaccinated with.
Well, assume a market would develop if that. I mean, that's what you have to assume, that the market hasn't developed because of the availability of these. The market would develop if they were banned.
Your Honor, I think the prospect and potential market reaction that drug manufacturers would, how they would react, is entirely speculative and would not be the type of injury
so
that would.
All the inferences go in favor of the plaintiff at this point for purposes of standing. That's all I'm getting at here.
Well, it is their burden to come forward with some evidence, though, and that I think they haven't done. But Your Honor, with respect to the past injuries, one thing I want to point out is that Congress has created a whole scheme, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, to redress injuries as a result of vaccines. So to the extent those women have suffered an injury.
That's the backward-looking problem.
Yes. No, they've lost children that they've wanted to have. I mean, getting money is probably not their goal.
Well, I can understand that, Your Honor, certainly, and I don't mean to diminish the injury being suffered, but my point is simply that there is an avenue of redress that Congress has provided for, at least in that instance. But a suit for prospective relief is a different animal, And we don't think that they have established the prerequisites to it.
Counsel, did the government put in data on the changing rates of incidence of the different kinds of vaccine?
I don't believe there is anything in the record on that, Your Honor, no. My information is from the CDC, which the court could certainly take judicial notice of.
All right. And I guess that, at least judging from the way this oral argument has gone, the government is not making the argument that plaintiffs fail to raise this form of standing.
I believe that they have attempted to show standing on the basis.
They've attempted to show standing. Have they attempted to show standing on the ground of either relative or absolute unavailability of mercury-free vaccines?
I suppose on a very generous reading of their appellate briefs, Your Honor, they have.
Oh.
But again, for all the reasons we've been discussing, that injury is not sufficient in our view. I mean, I do want to point out one thing about availability is that the plaintiffs below moved for a preliminary injunction. And one of their principal points in favor of seeking a preliminary injunction against the government was that there was no need to license these thimerosal-preserved vaccines because there was plenty of supply out there in the market to take care of that. And so there was no need for that stuff to be licensed. That's what they said in their own motion for a preliminary injunction. And again, you know, talk about availability. Dr. Geyer himself in his declaration talked about how, you know, he went to a pharmacy in Silver Spring, and which is, by the way, where COMED's headquarters are, and himself observed, quote, significant stocks of both thimerosal preserved vaccine and non-thimerosal preserved vaccine. So, I mean,
okay, can I just get back to standing just for a moment? Give me an example of somebody who would have standing to seek an injunction.
Your Honor, the only example in this particular case, the example I've come up with, somebody who might have Article III standing, is if you had a manufacturer who was manufacturing, say, thimerosal-free vaccines and said, hey, FDA, these thimerosal-preserved vaccines are not safe, then perhaps that manufacturer would have competitors.
So no association could ever figure out a way to have standing?
Your Honor, I'm
through its members.
Through a members who are consumers, I'm struggling to come up with a case, Your Honor.
That's what your brief read that way. So no, there is no way to show standing individual.
How about the Methodist women?
Well, the Methodist women, of course,
I know they're not parties, but,
no, but
suppose they were.
What about all the women who are members, all right?
Well, as you say, Your Honor, the Methodist women are not members of COMED or a party to this case. So
the argument that arises out of their existence is that you have this huge number of people who may be affected, who cannot really be reached, cannot be alerted to the need to avoid the thimerosal-containing vaccines, and therefore, they would take action if they could, but if they knew that they ought to, but they don't, and they can't be reached adequately.
Well, I mean, as the Supreme Court made clear in the Summers case, that for an association to sue on behalf of its members, you have to sue on behalf of particularly identifiable members. So that would be one hurdle that they would have to get over. And I mean, this court.
Okay, but let's just assume so I'm clear. What would an individual who is a member of this organization have to show for Article III standing? Just give me a specific hypothetical.
Again, Your Honor, I'm struggling to think of somebody who would, but I think at a minimum, that person would have to satisfy the standard for an increased risk claim.
Is that because they can go and get a vaccine that is mercury free?
Right, Your Honor. So it's difficult.
So that's your theory, right? That so long as there is the availability of the alternative, and so long as there is not at least some showing of an increased cost of some degree, then you don't have standing.
Right, and then you're left in the public citizen box of increased risk claims, which and as this court made clear in that case, to make out an increased risk claim, you have to show that the increased risk is substantial and that is an absolute matter. Taking that increased risk into account, the absolute risk is substantial. And in light of the availability of thimerosal-free vaccines, it's simply impossible for, I can't see how a plaintiff could make that showing in this case.
I guess what I don't understand is we have these affidavits of women who are members of this association. And hypothetically, they should be somewhat alert to this danger. And yet, when they were pregnant, they got these vaccines and they miscarried.
I'm not sure the declarations actually say that they were alert to the risk before they did that.
But no, I said presumably, all right? But my point is, I just need to know how somebody could have standing, and what you're telling me is a manufacturer maybe, but that there can be no associational standing based on an individual member.
I think that's right, Your Honor, but I don't think that's so surprising when you consider the standard for increased risk claims that this court established in the public citizen case. I think inherent in that is that if you have a risk that doesn't meet the threshold, it may be faced by a number of consumers, but they can't
sue. When you say public citizen, you mean Foreman.
No, I apologize, Your Honor. I mean the 2007, sorry, there's public citizen is a repeat player. I mean the 2007 public citizen case. Which involved a NHTSA rule involving tire inflation, and that's cited in our brief.
And the distinction you draw here is the some increased risk of harm hasn't been shown because of the availability.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. That is our principal argument. And again,
can I just follow up on that? It's available, but these women have miscarried, they claim, as a result of taking this vaccine. I mean, that's what I thought the Bacon case was trying to be clear about. You don't have to scour the world to find, you know, a mercury-free vaccine. If as a result of just normal living, you're exposed to a danger and it harms you.
True, but two points.
Yeah.
On that, Your Honor. I disagree that as a factual matter, any such that it has been remotely demonstrated by these plaintiffs that they need to scour the world to obtain a thimerosal-free vaccine in the upcoming.
That's the district court saying.
Well,
just the word all.
To the extent the district court is saying that, Your Honor, I certainly would not endorse that.
I'm not suggesting you're saying that, but I'm just trying to understand.
But I just would like to emphasize in the alternative that, again, I really don't think increased burden is either here nor there when the remedy they're seeking would clearly not redress that problem and indeed would make it far worse.
Well, some woman who's had a miscarriage may want to try again. Why isn't that enough?
They might want to try it again, Your Honor, but the difficulty is that if all thimerosal-preserved vaccines are banned, they would have a much more difficult time getting flu vaccine. And that
I know that's a hypothetical you've made several times here, and I don't know why that is so. And Judge Kavanaugh suggested, you know, a market would develop.
Let's see if we can go back to the other public citizen, the Bacon case. Wasn't it transparently easy for the plaintiffs there to avoid nitrate containing bacon by not eating bacon?
Well, that's right, Your Honor, but I mean, as the court...
That was a proposition that was staring the court in the face, the court didn't bat an eye.
But of course, what the court relied on was the fact that alternatives could not be procured at reasonable cost.
It said they were not readily available, but the avoidance of nitrite was incredibly available. Just not eat bacon.
Well, the question is not simply whether the injury may be avoided. The question is essentially whether you can get what you want while avoiding the injury. And here, that's obtaining a flu vaccine. And so we wouldn't contend that the mere fact that you don't have
you
to get...
You don't think it... It involves some consideration of the value of what you want. If the value of what you want is comparatively trivial, is utterly trivial, it still qualifies?
I guess maybe I was a little too colloquial, Your Honor. I guess you have to look at the object, what the plaintiff is trying to do. And in the bacon case, they're trying to eat bacon. In this case, they're trying to get vaccinated with flu. And so the inquiry would be, you look at what alternatives there are. And that's what the, that's how the court viewed it in the bacon case.
No, it put in that parenthetical. They didn't have to avoid, they didn't have to go to these extra efforts because they were harmed as a result of the extra cost.
Right, that's right, Your Honor. And that's exactly what has not
been shown
here.
And so I'm suggesting the loss of a baby is a cost.
It's a cost, Your Honor, but it's not a cost that they've demonstrated they face a risk from on a going forward basis in light of
if they get pregnant again
there are thimerosal free alternatives available, so they do not face that cost.
But these members have been a part of this organization and those alternatives were available then. At any rate, I don't think the bacon case supports you as far as that's concerned. There was nitrate-free bacon available. And if loss of a baby is a cost.
Well, that's right, Your Honor. The key distinction is that they have not shown that there is any increased burden or cost as a result of obtaining the alternative in this case. And that's the key distinction.
Bacon, the public citizen didn't require that.
It certainly did talk about that bacon was not available at reasonable cost, so I think it did.
And these people I guess we've exhausted this.
And not readily available at a reasonable price.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But you could avoid the bacon altogether, I guess. Depends on the level of generality as a lot of issues.
Well, you could avoid the bacon altogether, and again, we're not contending that you could avoid a flu vaccine altogether.
The court didn't suggest that in defeating standing in Foreman, public citizen versus Foreman. On the contrary, it's held that there was standing.
We're not suggesting that the fact that you could avoid a flu vaccine negates the injury asserted here, Your Honor. We certainly are not suggesting that, and to the extent I suggested otherwise.
Since the test, if there is a test, has to combine both the loss of the thing generally, bacon, vaccine, with the incremental difficulty in getting the right kind.
Exactly, Your Honor. I think that's exactly the right way to look at it.
The difficulty the bacon case presents for you is that, at least to me, it appears that the first thing, first step of the process, the undifferentiated bacon, seems trivial. But
it
may be that the panel in Foreman saw that very differently.
Well, but I would like to emphasize that another difference between the bacon case, besides what we've been discussing, is again this sort of market redressability point. I understand your point, Judge Rogers, about, you know, well, maybe the market will spring up if they banned all this. Maybe it won't. We don't know. I mean, again, it's really speculative. We don't really know what the market will do. It's a complicated thing. And so, respectfully, we would suggest that would not be an injury sufficient to show Article III standing. If there are no further questions, I'm well over my time, so we ask that the district court's judgment to be affirmed.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Your Honor, please, the court.
Counsel for the FDA suggests that if you rule this way, you're going to deprive the society, our country, of flu shots. And I don't think there's anything in the record to really bear that out.
I didn't hear them say exactly that. What I heard was that there would likely be a diminution in supply, taking vaccines in the aggregate.
I apologize then. A diminution in supply could deprive some people of vaccines. So there could be as much harm, if that's true, that there might occur as a result of our claim. But I don't think there's any proof in the record of that. And in fact, in the record, in the joint appendix, is a statement that I quoted in my brief at page 31 at the top. In an August 1998 FDA internal point paper prepared for the Maternal Immunization Working Group officially recommended as follows. I'm going to read the quote. For investigational vaccines indicated for maternal immunization, the use of single-dose vials should be required to avoid the need for preservative in multi-dose vials. Of course, there is a potential neurotoxic effect of mercury, especially when considered cumulative doses of this component in early pregnancy. Now, that does say single-dose vials, but...
I don't see that helps us on this market speculation.
Well, what I'm saying to you is they're talking about the cumulative doses of mercury. There's reason there not just to have vaccines for pregnant women, but mercury-free vaccines for everyone. There are other...
The government's argument on this point is that, at least in the short run, the availability of vaccines for everyone might decline as a result of the remedy you seek.
Well, I agree with your statement about the short run, but this is a statement of 1998, which is 13 years ago.
No, but we have to project what would happen in the event of your getting the relief you seek.
Well, I would suppose, and I may be wrong, that they could move for a preliminary injunction on the enforcement of anything like this until such time as they could get their supply up.
I don't have any more questions.
Anything further, counsel?
I think it's all in the brief, in terms of prudential standing. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.